JK Starfield.
Can't play Starfield on a Monday.
Yeah. Starfield really liked lasagna for some reason.
Someone can make a deconstruction Starfield without Starfield.
Starfield, his nine lives. I don't know. How far will this go? Hey, it looks like we're live anyway.
Hello.
Hi, Chad. I don't know.
We were talking about how Starfield and Garfield sound similar. And yes. How that makes for a lot of confusion.
Yes. Well, you can't even play Starfield as an orange cat. Talk so much for player customization, eh?
Give it a week after. Someone already modded in. You could play as CJ from Grand Theft Auto San Andreas as the mech in Armored Core. So if they could do that in a weekend, we'll get Garfield and Starfield in no time.
Huh. Fair enough. Yes, hello chat, welcome to Slightly Something Else. I'm Yartz Crucial, I'm joined as always by Marty Sleaver.
Hello.
And this week, in I'm not sure if I'd use the word celebration, in acknowledgement of the success of games like Baldur's Gate 3, the release of Sea of Stars, and other games in niche genres getting a bit of a comeback in recent times, which is something we could all have expected now that audiences have soured to the usual mainstream garbage. Mm-hmm. We thought we'd talk about what other less seen so much genres deserve a comeback.
Yeah, and we're seeing it a lot in, Baldur's Gate obviously is not the first CRPG popular in the past couple of years, but it sort of stands on the shoulders of stuff like Divinity and Disco Elysium and Wasteland and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then we're even seeing it with Armored Core. People seem to love Armored Core, bringing back that high budget mecha genre, and then indies like Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, which is carrying the torch for Jet Set Radio.
Basically, everything is getting a boost because everyone's so sick of the usual crap. It's a great time for innovation. We're in one of the more positive stages of the ebb and flow of creativity in mainstream creative media.
Yeah. And there's nothing more creative than going into the past and being like, well, that was popular 20 years ago. Let's just do that.
Well,
you know what? I'm honestly kind of fine with.
The pattern starts with a phase of remakes, and we've been in that for a while. Resident Evil 4, Metroid Prime, everything getting remade and re-released for a while. And now we're in the sort of the follow-up stage where it's not so much remaking as bringing back old concepts and seeing what sticks. So as you say, Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, which I had a little go on, I might play more of, but I was never really one for that sort of high-stakes Tony Hawk's style of gameplay where the game's like, right, impress us now with a sequence of tricks. And
we're also going to send the cops after you.
Yeah, and if you don't, you have to start all over again.
Yeah.
So I guess in the spirit of the topic, what do you think is a genre that hasn't yet come back and needs one?
So I'm. It's funny that that's a good jumping off point, because Bomb Rush, while very clearly being like Jet Set Radio 3 in all but name, I miss that era of the sort of extreme sports game that we got. Tony Hawk came in, and then we got things like Aggressive Inline and Dave Mara's BMX. And there was something about those games that felt like the ones that actually like floated to the top, the ones like the creme de la creme, felt like this really interesting combination of a 3D platformer mixed with like the situational awareness and sort of the left brain thinking of a puzzle game mixed with the dexterity of a fighting game. And that was such a neat combo to me that feels like it's been kind of left at the wayside. And we've had some attempts. Tony Hawk came back with a remake remaster thing. And then there was that game. You remember Rollerdrome from a year or two ago? That was like that style of shooter when you were on the skates. Yeah that kind of like some of the ideas.
Tony Hawk's, but with combat as well.
Yeah. And so we're getting more and more, which we see, you know, we saw the sort of the era when all the indie games were, looking like 8-bit games, because that was like the games that those developers grew up with, like the Shovel Knights and whatnot. And now we're seeing, you know, as a younger crop of developers comes in, we're seeing those who were inspired by games from the late 90s and, you know, the stuff of the Dreamcast and the PS1 and PS2.
Yeah,
and
the typical
N64.
Nostalgia wave. Of course, we've been enjoying the Boomer Shooter revival for a long time now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's funny because I feel like if we would have had this exact same topic 5 years ago, a lot of the genres that we might have mentioned might have already come back. You know, people in the past have been like, it felt like we, for a while, there were no 3D platformers outside of like your Marios. But now, not only do we have these 3D platformers in the indie scene, and, you know, you reviewed Hellpie, and then there was a couple of recent indies like Orbo's Odyssey and Pseudo Regalia that I really liked, but Nintendo's still carrying that flag. We got Sonic Frontiers last year, which I really liked. We got Balan Wonderworld.
What was that one? I played it very quickly. It was like Koa or something? Koa and the Pirates?
Koa and the Five Pirates.
I played a bit of that. That's very Hat in Timey.
Yeah, yeah. And then obviously Hat in Time. Yeah, so it feels like, and with the Psychonauts sequel and everything, it feels like that genre like has new life injected to it in a way that maybe in the early 2010s we kind of didn't have that.
Interesting you mentioned extreme sports, because when I think of extreme sports, I always think of why I liked Spider-Man 2 on the GameCube so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that wasn't that made by the Tony Hawk developers?
That was Treyarch, yeah.
Yeah, because the way it treated the web swinging and the acrobatics in that game felt very much like it was treating it like an extreme sports game. It was full of acrobatic challenges and race missions. And what made Spider-Man games suffer after that was that they tended to focus more on being beat-em-up, stroke, Arkham Asylum rip-offs, open worlds with less emphasis on traversal and more on just pointing in the direction you want to go and holding down the web-swing button. And it started coming back with the Insomniac game Spider-Man's, of course, but it was still like that heavy combat emphasis.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you mentioned platformers, because part of me thinks that part of the reason like a whole lot of genres just sort of disappeared for a while was the switch from 2D to 3D graphics in the late 90s. Everything was first-person shooters for a while. But before then, in the 16-bit era and like some ways into the 32-bit era, you could have the limitations of 2D gameplay spread out in all sorts of different directions, like platformers in 2D are an entirely different prospect to platformers in 3D. It took a long time to figure out how to get platformers in 3D to work properly.
Yeah, there was a lot of growing pains with most of the early generation ones.
Funnily enough, the extra dimension sort of screwed with things a bit. But even beyond that, when people were limited to just 2D, there was a lot of more creativity in terms of what you could do with, say, management sims and strategy games and top-down action games. You had to think about it a bit more. Nowadays, everyone's got those 3D engines with everything prepackaged for them. You just knock out shitty
even small indie teams,
first-person shooters whenever you want.
Yeah, yeah, and this doesn't, it feels like no genre is sort of gatekept to high budget, you know, like if you want to make a shooter, you can make a shooter. If you want to make an RPG, you can make an RPG. You know, the sky's kind of the limits at this point, which is not how it was, 10 years ago.
And of course, the longest time, AAA games were just trying to create the sort of hypothetical zenith of gaming by seeing how many different things they could get working at the same time in a single game.
Yeah.
Into like the glut of like open world crafting sandboxes.
Yeah.
What I've now called the Jiminy Cockthroat experience. And I think it's in backlash to that we're seeing a return to lots of like more hyper-focused genre experiences.
Yeah. And that's funny because it feels like for a while, like there was this thought of like, oh, well, you need to be one of those everything games, not like the everything games we talked about, but a game that where if you try, you're a multi-hyphenate game because certain genres just won't sell, just don't have an audience. And I feel like things keep being proven. That's proven wrong. Like there was a time a while ago, people said, oh, CRPGs, that's niche. That's not going to be able to find an audience. And then Baldur's Gate 3 comes along and it's, you know, it's like breaking Steam records and everything. So I think it shows that like if handled by the right teams and done correctly, no genre is too niche, which is, which is exciting. And another a good example, I know you haven't had a chance to jump in yet, but a game that feels very stripped down and is even level based is Armored Core 6, which I think if a lot of people are jumping in kind of just expecting, you know, a Dark Souls or an Elden Ring, they're gonna be surprised that Armored Core 6 is a lot like the previous Armored Core games, in which just from a main menu you select your sortie, your mission, and missions can be 60 seconds long, some of them could be 5 minutes long, some of them could be 10, depending on how much trouble a boss is giving you, but everything is very bite-sized.
I feel like the Japanese industry has done level stroke mission based stuff a lot more than the Western industry.
Yeah, even we had the aforementioned Balan Wonderworld is even level-based.
I think of things like Bayonetta, where it's they stop at the end of every chapter to let you know how well you did.
Yeah, which I like. Give me a little letter. Throw an S in there. I don't know why, but that's cool.
I find those a little bit demoralizing, especially when they keep giving me shitty awards. It's like, oh, you just scraped through with the stone. I'm like, eat my shit, game. I was trying my best.
You know what? As long as it's above an F for me, I'm like, we did it. We got through the level. You know, if it's a D, that's fine.
You know, the worst games for that was the 3D Sonics. I don't know what fucking criteria those games are judging you on. But I think I'm doing all right. And I get to the end and it's like, you just got to see. Could have done better than that.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen Ross Scott's Game Dungeon review on Sonic Heroes, he does good riff on that subject.
I keep thinking of the Sonic Heroes theme song for some reason. And I didn't even play. I played 2 hours of Sonic Heroes, but that theme song is just in my head and I wanted to leave. So if you have any suggestions, please help me. So do you think, you said that sort of the Japanese are still are able to have that, a lot of Japanese devs, that mentality of kind of treating games as levels, as missions, not necessarily everything has to be this big sprawling thing. And obviously you have your examples of Final Fantasy 16, which kind of leaned into Western influences and everything, and even Elden Ring. But, is that something you think you could see Western developers taking a cue from and making their own, sort of taking off with it?
Well, I've always felt Japanese games have lent towards very orderly structuring. I mean, even in the Japanese homegrown open world stuff, Yakuza, all the missions are very tightly organized in the menus.
Yeah.
They definitely appreciate that sort of almost ceremonial process.
Yeah.
Where everything has to have, every mission has to be properly organized with a proper mission start and a proper mission end.
I mean, even if you look at a game like Phantom Pain, we got credits at the beginning and end of every mission. Which is still very funny.
I don't know if that reflects the Japanese cultural mindset. I don't know if it's racist to say that, but that's the impression I've gotten.
I don't think that's racist. I think in the case of Metal Gear, that just more reflects Kojima and Kojima being weird. Which is just wonderful. I think. Please stay weird, Kojima.
It's funny, I'd have said Metal Gear Solid was an exception. That does.
I would have said up until 5, yeah.
Yeah, that feels like an adventure through a continually evolving situation.
Yeah, 1, 2, and 3, definitely.
With no specific, marker points from one section of the mission to the next.
Yeah. Another genre that it's funny because you mentioned you haven't played Immortals of Avium yet, but that's something
new. I think I might check it out though, because Nick was talking it up on Twitter. Well, he talks up fucking everything. He's very easily pleased, that boy. But
say anything. I'm the exact same way, so I'm not going to say anything.
I think that's my afternoon. I'm going to play Armored Core 6 for a bit and Immortals of Avium for a bit, and I'm going to see which one grabs me first.
Let them fight.
If either.
But Immortals does, if you guys don't know, Immortals of Avium is the newest EA Originals.
I will say now, I am never going to remember that title 6 months from now.
It's very bland.
I was playing Guess the Game this morning.
Yeah.
And,
you're obsessed. You're obsessed with Guess the Game.
I know, it's great. And the answer, I had an idea of what I wanted to guess, but I absolutely could not remember the name of the game. I'd even reviewed it. I even remembered some of the funny jokes I'd made about it, and I couldn't for the life of me remember what it was called because it had such a generic shitty name. So in the end, I had to go looking it up with some fairly well-organized searches, and it turned out I was thinking of, I've almost forgotten it again, Walson Lords of Mayhem.
Oh my God, really bad name.
I know.
A really bad name. It's when something you about, take a made-up word and then add a couple modifiers that are just pretty bland and used in a lot about, of other things.
That's why I was bringing it up in relation to Immortals of Avium, because it's the combination of... It wasn't the answer, Bear Bomb, don't worry, for the, today's Guess the Game. It was just the one I was thinking of. But yeah, it's the combination of a made-up word and an incredibly generic other bit of title that makes it really hard to stick in my memory. Although, I guess Kingdoms of Amalur Reckoning is kind of the exception that proves the rule.
It's almost so dumb that it's like, okay, I'll remember this one. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, really bad name. But the game is ultimately, it's like a short single player, like 12-hour first-person shooter, but set in a magical world.
Oh,
so
God.
Your first-person shooting games. Is...
Short games, remember so- those? Thank Christ.
That's the genre I want to come back. But the sort of the short single-player shooter campaign, which is something it seems like we used to get all the time. And now we have this boom of retro shooters, the boomer shooters that feel like they're taking that place in the indie scene. But like we just don't get big sort of high-budget shooter campaigns anymore, aside from you know, you get your Call of Duty once a year, but that's almost like an afterthought compared to the multiplayer.
Yeah, the multiplayer. Remember like the old PS3 360 heyday when you'd have like a random shooter every other week? Shit, like
absolutely
the Turok remake and
stuff like the Darkness and stuff that like did something interesting with its world and mechanics.
Yeah, that's why Evil West felt like such a throwback. That's exactly that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Halo, of course. Halo Infinite didn't do so well, did it? Trying to be the open world thing.
It didn't. Everything doesn't have to be open world. Sometimes you can close your world off and everything will be fine. Look what we got. And then people release things like Hi-Fi Rush. Again, one of the reasons, well, the stealth release was one thing, but just the fact that it was nice and simple.
Yeah, and over 8 hours.
Really
just had a really solid core gameplay loop.
Yeah. And then speaking of other, you know, aside from 3D platformers, other genres that feel like they made a comeback, which you've made videos about before, was it feels like we saw the death of the point-and-click adventure game, but then saw it,
as
I don't know,
point-and-click adventure. Point and click adventure fans will always pick you up on that point. They'll say, no, it didn't. This game's never died. There was always a very strong amateur development scene. There was a very strong indie scene through the 90s and 2000s. They were just not a mainstream genre anymore, partly because of the move to 3D, as I've talked about in my extra punctuation about my adventure games stopped being good. But yeah, they've certainly had their noteworthy titles in the last few years. I still think it's a very limited genre. I mean, these days people expect something more like your Baldur's Gate 3 experience, and your more sort of open-ended RPG or Disco Elysium for your very heavily narrative-based experiences. The whole inventory puzzle thing was always felt like a very limiting way to pace out the player's experience.
Or we have games that sort of feel like they take the spirit of those old games but take them in a different direction, like your Obadiens, your Outer Wilds, your Citizen Sleepers.
Yeah, I mean, there was influence taken from adventure games for a whole bunch of things. I'd ask you, immersive sims like Deus Ex took a lot of influence from the adventure games of the 90s.
I'd agree with that as well. So yeah, you see, you know, almost that kind of like what is dead may never actually die.
Let's speculate. Let's try to think of genres that haven't come back yet that we'd like to see come back.
Okay, one I don't want to come back.
Okay.
And I know why it's gone. And this is kind of a cheat because there's two of them. The plastic instruments, which were the biggest fucking thing in the world.
I haven't got any more fucking cupboard space for those things. No.
Well, what about the second genre, Toys to Life? So that was the two that felt like everyone was like hanging their hat on. This is going to be the future. So you had both your Rock Bands and your Guitar Heroes, and then you had your Skylanders, your Lego Dimensions, your Disney Infinities, your Starlinks. I think they realized just people don't want to be buying all this shit. Some people want to buy all this shit. Mm-hmm. And I say that as someone who started collecting Amiibo this year because I'm sad and buying things makes me happy. But man, I just don't want to have all this shit around. I don't want these plastic guitars everywhere.
No, quite. God, I remember those days.
It was great at the time. Like when I was in college and having a Rock Band set up, that was great.
Went through three Rock Band drum kits. That technology was not designed to be very heavily smacked with sticks over and over again for long periods.
Yeah, yeah. Just a weird era where that was just one of the biggest things. Like that was E3 conferences being like, we got the Beatles in this game. We made a Beatles game and we got Paul McCartney and Ringo here. Like that's wild.
There's still a popular niche. It's all about that what's it called? That sort of universal Guitar Hero game you can play on PC.
Oh, Rocksmith?
I think I don't think it's
Rocksmith. The Ubisoft one where you can kind of learn your own.
Yeah,
Rocksmith's, like it's almost like a guitar training tool.
Yeah, Rocksmith's the one where it actually teaches you how to play guitar. But there's one that everyone uses these days. Clone Hero, thank you, Dimitri. It's like the open source Guitar Hero.
Oh, I've never even heard of it.
It's very popular with the people who can't let go of that particular niche.
Yeah,
You can get pretty much every song for that, and there's like a huge speedrunning and like skill run community for that.
Oh, funny. Yeah, and obviously like the rhythm genre is still alive and well, especially in indie games, and you get your Crypt of the Necro Dancers, and you know, it feels like every year we get a couple.
Well,
ones
Rhythm
like that.
Action is its own thing, and Rhythm Action has been pretty thoroughly explored. You have your Hillsinger and your Beats Per Minute and Hi-Fi Rush, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Perfect example from earlier this year. But yeah, in terms of actual plastic instruments, I don't need those to come back. Those can stay gone.
Well, thank goodness for that. As for the things that I actually do want to come back, I'd like to see a return of the pure stealth game.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, because for the longest time, stealth was just another ingredient in the Jiminy Cockthroat model, where it's just, hey, you could try to stealth your way through this enemy camp at first, but if you fuck up, we'll just, you know, you can just shoot your way out.
Yeah,
But I was always a huge fan of the Thief series, as you know, especially Thief 2. These huge, sprawling levels full of, like, drafty castle corridors where... you see games like Hitman that have a sort of immersive sim style, like social engineering kind of stealth where you hide among crowds and stuff. But I always liked the sort of lonely D&D style thief experience that the thief gets with. There's just like one guard patrolling the route and he's not like, there's not guards all the time all around you, but there are guards there and the levels are so large and sprawling. You never know when their patrol route is going to take you by surprise.
Yeah, that feels like if someone like really leaned into that, I feel like that's one of those genres where it wouldn't be like, oh, this is too niche. Like if someone really leaned into it and
not your military stealth, like your Splinter Cell, like Agent Provocateur, Metal Gear Solid style stealth, and not your like social stealth, like in Hitman, but much more your lonely atmospheric stealth. What's that game?
Yeah.
Gloomwood? That they're making?
Gloomwood? Yeah, that's right. Or is it? Or Gloomhaven. No, yeah, Gloomwood.
Something like that. One of those.
Yeah.
I'm hoping like for that sort of experience when that's out of early access.
Yeah. It's funny because you mentioned the social, because there's like stealth is a huge component of a lot of massive multiplayer games, like of stuff like prop hunt games and obviously you're Among Us, your social stealth games. But there's a cool game coming out later in September called No Sun to Worship. It's coming to Steam. I think it's like a solo dev, but it looks like I put the link in the. Don't open it though. If you open the link, it's going to play the trailer very loud. So we've learned our lesson. But it looks like a take on. It's almost like a spooky take on your Splinter Cells or your Metal Gears. But yeah, and even Fran, one of our contributors in the chat, mentioned bringing back Tenchu, which it feels like Sekiro was kind of that, but like you could stealth your way through Sekiro, but ultimately, you know, it would come down to actual one-on-one fights.
Yeah, you'd have to do the boss fights, otherwise it's not a From Software game, is it?
Yeah. Although it would be pretty funny if it was like, if you are good enough at stealth, you can one-shot the boss if you get there without a single person seeing you. Every boss is sleeping, and if you raise no alarms, you could just kill them in their sleep.
There's games that's done that, hasn't it? I think the first Deus Ex, you could, like when boss fights showed up, you could just piss off.
I love that.
And then the boss fight would show up later and said, why'd you piss off? And I'm like, because I didn't like giving you the time of day, and I don't feel like doing it now, so I'm going to piss off again.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, that'd be great. Stealth, that's a good one. Another one I was thinking about was the vehicular combat games.
Oh, I think sort someone of in the chat mentioned that. Yeah, car combat.
Perfect. Yeah, we have your, you know, we had an era with the Twisted Metals, the Full Autos, the Vigilante Eights, the Star Wars Demolition, which is very bad.
Yeah, I remember the first wave of those, Carmageddon.
Yeah.
Demolition Derby was a game like way back.
Which Carmageddon, if you are a member on YouTube or Patreon, you can watch Frost's latest Stuff of Legends about the development of Carmageddon and why the authorities were called on the devs because they thought they were murdering people. They weren't. Spoilers.
Twisted Metal was a weird one. You had like the...
weird one, yeah.
Yeah. Like you had that car combat thing, and then they'd have this really weird sort of gothic horror plot attached to it.
Yeah, especially like the first, like... The first few were like, okay, you're leaning into like how this is kind of silly. And then Twisted Metal Black came out and it was like, oh, this is like really fucked up, but it's like a silly arcade game.
Yeah. Even more so with that most recent one with the full on FMV cutscenes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we have the Twisted Metal. Did you know a Twisted Metal TV series was released last month?
I did sort of hear that on the Underground Grapevine. Couldn't avoid it. Couldn't avoid the ads on Twitter for a while.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure you're a subscriber to Peacock, right?
I didn't even know one could subscribe to Peacocks.
It's a Peacock. It's on Peacock. Yeah, you can subscribe to Peacock.
They just deliver one to your house every month, and then you just have a Peacock in your yard.
Yeah, yeah. But if you don't pay, they come and take it. They come and take it away. So
I was really attached to that Peacock.
Oh, that's a shame. And then another one that I was thinking of was I miss the era of movie tie-ins. And I realize a lot of movie tie-ins were very bad, and we would point to those games as like, oh, this is like fucking shovelware that was created just to be able to hit this movie coming out. But at the same time, it gave us stuff like GoldenEye, and you mentioned Spider-Man 2, and I'm like, I feel like there's a lot of movies over the past decade that we haven't gotten game adaptations of, and I'm kind of like, I kind of wish... they would have tried something, not like Oppenheimer, but like, what if a good developer would have tried to make a game based on the Barbie movie that came out this summer?
Oh, God, like, there have been so many Barbie video games, and they all
But what if it was a good one? What if we did a good one?
Well, games take so much longer to make than films these days. These days they just film films on their iPhones in like 3 weeks.
Not even, no, they're on strike. They're not filming anything, though.
Oh, okay. Well, back when they were making films, that's what they did.
But yeah, we won all these, like, what about these recent James Bond movies? I was making a James Bond game, but it's not going to be attached to any of these movies. I want a movie game. Give me a movie game.
Well, no, because they'd never be able to give a developer enough notice to be able to bring out a game with a film anymore.
Yeah. But yeah, I miss that era.
What else do I miss? Well, I wanted to bring up platforming in the specific Prince of Persia Sands of Time style parkour style of platforming, which is about sort of figuring out the chain of parkour movements you had to do to advance through the level.
Yeah, yeah.
I missed that. I could miss how you could pull it off really smoothly, like just going from move to move and feel like a real badass.
Yeah, it's funny. It feels like that's... we almost have more of that in the first-person genre, which feels like just a way different thing.
I know. I mean, yeah,
like your Ghost Runner 2 is coming out in a few months.
Sands of Time was always like switching from third person to fixed camera.
Yeah.
And, with stuff like your Ghost Runner and your... what was another one that came out recently was that sort of thing?
Neon White?
Neon White as well, but there was something that I was playing the other day that was felt a lot like Ghost Runner, but It wasn't called that. I guess it also had a shitty title.
Was it Crawl?
Oh, it might have been, actually, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of forgettable titles.
Yeah, but the first-person parkour stuff, like a Ghost Runner, it's always like they do it like it's a little arena and you're supposed to use it to fight off the enemies. I want to see something that's more focused on the platforming challenge. Or it's like an open-world thing, like Dying Light. Something where you have to get through this specific sequence of challenges with the parkour moves we've given you and see how you do.
Yeah, it feels like you mentioned Dying Light, and like I guess like parkour almost feels like a thing that is just sprinkled on other games, but isn't necessarily like the core identity of that game. Whereas in,
I guess I've always had a soft spot for very specifically traversal focused games. Remember those games like back in the olden days where you, stuff like Sky Roads, where you would just a sprite in the middle of the screen and just like this endless walkway, like stretching off in front of you, and you had to jump over the gaps and stuff.
Yeah, and that's like you, if you want to talk about a game getting you in a flow state, like once you pick up those games, those man, those will start feeling really good.
And the reason why it's hard to do that in first person in like your Mirror's Edge is because you can't really plan ahead. It's like we just have to react to challenges as they come up in something like Mirror's Edge. And I'd like to I'd like to get the lay of the like the sequence of traps and jumps ahead of me and go, right, I need to wall run across that, then jump there, then jump there, jump there, and done.
Yeah, and that almost feeds into how I was talking about like Tony Hawk at the beginning of the stream, where it turns the level design into a puzzle that you almost need to quickly do the mental math on to plan out what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And I got a little bit of that recently when I was replaying Shadow of the Colossus, actually. Mm. Like climbing one of these things, you're trying to think a few moves ahead. You're like, all right, I want to get onto his hairy hand because I know he's going to rub his shoulder, so I could jump onto his shoulder then and then try to run around onto his head to stab him in the head and do a bad.
Being able to plan ahead. Yeah. Actually, I was just reminded, so speaking of traversal games, did you play XO1 a couple of years back?
I did, yeah. Yeah, that, the one where you're like...
That game really felt like an elevation of the classic sort of Sky Road style traversal game.
Yeah, yeah. And that was a game like gets you in a trance.
Yeah, I was quite hypnotized by it until you get to that one jungle planet that sucks.
You're like, I'm not having fun anymore. Yeah, why are you doing this to me, XO1?
Moving on.
Yeah. Another genre I've been thinking of lately, because of a few games I've replayed. I played Asura's Wrath right before, or earlier in the summer. Me and my Asura's Wrath, and I loved it. I had a great time, and I was like, this is fucking cool. Why were QTEs not the future of video games?
I like maybe it's just me, but I prefer games that have a bit of game with their cutscene as well.
No, that's too much. That's too much game. Just get my cutscene here. And then Final Fantasy 16 came out, and I was like, fuck yeah, you guys understood. You guys made these incredible boss battles and put the QTEs in. And then I played Balan, and then we go back to Balan. And the QTE sections in Balan, the Balan's bouts, so bad. It is shockingly bad that I finished Balan, and by the end of the stream, I had lost 27 of them in a row. There were 27 QTE sections that I could not perfect in order to get a trophy in a row.
Because they wouldn't give you the trophy unless you perfected every single QTE in it.
And you can't redo them. You got to redo them. You got to leave the whole level and get back to it. And even if you fuck up the first press, there's no way to skip the rest of it. You just got to fail through the rest of it. It is amazing. Like, it was like a baffling game design decision.
I think that sums up the whole game. Just one baffling game design decision after another. I
mean, it was impressive how weird it was.
What was the problem that specific mechanic was intended to fix, I wonder? Because I've thought about it, and I think it was just the main character of the game has absolutely no presence in the game if you took them out.
Yeah. Also, the plot... I'm going to spoil the end of Balan Wonderworld. You're a character who like lives in like an orphanage and a kid, and you think everyone's talking shit about you, and so you run away from the orphanage and you meet Balan, who's like a trickster god, and then you go and help these people. But then at the end, you go back to the orphanage, and it turns out they weren't talking shit about you. They were planning a birthday party for you. So does your character just not know it was their birthday? Like, what? Like, the big reveal at the end of the game is, oh, no, they weren't talking shit. They were just whispering because they're planning your birthday party. And I'm like, what? Does this person not know it's their birthday? That, like, oh, they're probably doing something for my birthday. Like, I could not wrap my head around what the game wanted me to think at the end of it, which is all great art.
So yeah, an entire game that could have been avoided with just better communication skills.
Yeah.
Like a classic farce.
Yeah.
Shall we go to Super Chats? There's a ton of suggestions from people.
Hell yeah.
Let me know if this isn't the first one. Eclavia Mishra, welcome to bonus content. All good?
Yep, okay. That's the first.
B.S. Marsh then gives us $2 and says, Marty, I guess you sort of like Sea of Starts. That's supposed to be a little criticism there, B.S. Marsh.
No. It was a typo. B.S. Marsh afterwards said that was a typo. And I said, at least you didn't write Sea of Sharts. I did. I did like Sea of Stars. My 3MR is available now on the site. There you can check it out. And then Yahtzee will have a zero punctuation on it soon.
Man, we're really chilling for this game.
Oh, my God. We did a doc. We get a doco on it, too?
Two reviews and a doco. Man, I hope it doesn't suck or we'll look really dumb. Well, that was basically the thinking behind reviewing it.
Yes.
Because I'd better like make sure it doesn't suck. Or, you know, we've put a lot of backing on this horse. Anyway, Wesley Thomas gives, you can find out my opinion on Wednesday.
Yay!
It's not quite as effusive as Marty's, I'm afraid, but...
That sounds like most games, if I'm going to be honest.
Well, there you go. I ain't going to spoil shit.
Okay, I don't want you to spoil shit. I want to do a quick sanity check. Okay. Jason Schreier said that he was enjoying the game, but he found it baffling that no one mentioned how many spelling and grammar errors they were. And I literally don't remember any. Like,
oh, well, now you mention it.
Maybe I gloss over them. Like, did you notice them? Like,
now you mention it, I think a couple jumped out. But I didn't say they were an excess, not enough that I would remember to put it in my review or anything.
Yeah, I just found that he was like, it's baffling how many there are. And I was like, I didn't notice that many. And like, characters speak a little differently. And so, like, you know, characters will use slang or whatever. And
well, I'm a very fast reader at the best of times. I tend to skim through dialogue a lot.
Same. And so maybe that's why I didn't, because I didn't like really pause and hold time on any lines. I was just kind of like, I understand what everyone's saying. Mm.
Anyway, Wesley Thomas gives $5 Canadian and says, I have nothing to contribute this week, yet. I just want to ask for an Adventurer's Nigh prequel that shows what everyone got arrested over. Oh, but wouldn't that spoil the mystery, Wesley Thomas?
No.
I always get faintly disappointed when a prequel comes out. Because it's like, well, we absolutely cannot be bothered to continue this plot. Let's wallow in it for a bit.
Do you, without saying... When you guys were making your characters, did Jack tell you to, for yourselves, think of why you were arrested? Like,
yes. He said, you know, just try to come up with your own idea for how you were arrested. And I think my answer to that was for the obvious reason. Because, you know, my feeling was that if Mortimer was picked up by a police car, his first thought would be, yeah, figures. Because I'm a huge thief, con artist. Bastard.
It doesn't matter which exact crime I'm getting arrested for.
There's a warrant out for me for something, I'm sure. Justin James gives $10 and says, hey Yahtzee, do you count something like Hi-Fi Rush in this comeback kind of renaissance? It seems to harken back in my mind anyway to like a really good PS2 game. I had very similar thoughts, Justin James. Not so much a comeback for rhythm or rhythm action games, but just the comeback of the creative, colourful PS2 era sort of game that I'd also put God Hand, Katamari Damacy, all those really Akami, all those really weird and quirky PS2 games that came out around then because the PS2 had such good third-party support.
Yeah.
And wasn't a huge pain in the ass to develop for with all those top-of-the-range graphics and stuff, so none of that actually got in the way of the creative vision.
And I especially like that Hi-Fi Rush came from a studio that had been known for completely different games and from a first party publisher like that. I want more of it. Like, I want Sony to allow their teams, like, have Naughty Dog work on something small and colorful and weird and different. Like, and I understand that it feels like these a lot of these teams are kind of shackled to their massive, you know, GOTY winning IP. And I'm like, that's kind of boring. Like, yeah, they can make that and make all their money and stuff, but let it fund these weird side projects.
And you say it was unusual for the developer, but there was something about it that really stank of Shinji Mikami to me.
Interesting.
It did give me a lot of God Hand vibes.
That
might have been just the main character is a dude in a scarf with a weird arm who's got a weird love-hate relationship with the main female character.
That's pretty much God Hand, yeah. Checks out.
Robert Johnson gives $10 Canadian and says, Marty, thank you very much for letting me about Bomb Rush Cyberpunk. Square brackets. Sick. Close square brackets. I still play Jet Set Radio Future to this day, and I had two ideas. There was a sequel. Square brackets. Sick. Close square brackets. Now I just need to wait for a Steam sale.
Just fucking read it. This is the Sea of Stars thing. I just read it. I was like, this is
the sort of laissez-faire attitude to grammar that creates situations like Sea of Stars being full of typos.
No. Grammar's words are jazz. It's fine. It's fine, baby. It's fine. Use whatever words you want. Oh, thank you. I'm glad you're checking out Bomb Rush. It's great.
Oh, did I say jazz?
If you like Jet Set Radio.
Do you say jazz? I meant jizz.
Oh, no. Well, jizz is the name of the jazz in the Star Wars universe.
Words of jizz, if you ask me. And if you don't want to be judged, don't like spray your jizz willy nilly over all over the place.
Yeah, it's great. That's great. That's zero notes. Perfect advice.
Alex Armstrong is $2 and says, "No, it needs to come back. Papers, Please clones." I wasn't aware there were any, Alex Armstrong.
There's one. Oh my god, I can't remember the name of it. Frost and I did a stream of an upcoming one for Steam Next Fest a little while ago. I didn't remember what the name of that game was, but it was set in like a medieval city, and it was like a cartoonish medieval city, and you were papers pleasing people. It was delightful. The demo was wonderful. Lil Guardsman, that's what it was called. Lil Guardsman.
There was Not Tonight as well, and Not Tonight not too. Tonight.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of
Or people can just come up with your own cool indie ideas that feel different.
Yeah, as now you mentioned it, there have been a few indie sort of bureaucracy ups.
Mm-hmm.
What was that one where you were like a sci-fi policeman looking for aliens? I don't know.
That sounds made up.
Dr. Zebra gives $5 and says, Yahtzee, you've inspired me to write my own book. The working title is We'll Blow Up the Solar System for No Reason.
Oh,
wow,
no.
I guess that sounds pretty directly inspired. It's nice that people are creating the sort of asylum films version of my books. That's how you know you've made it, I suppose.
Oh, to come out the same week as your book? Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Lucky Seventh gives 15. Oh, blimey. Whatever.
Those are shekels.
Shekels, thank you.
Those are shekels.
Here's a tip for your hard work. Hope you keep on doing what you do. Smiley face.
We will.
I noticed with your smiley face, you put a space between the colon and the parentheses. Do you ever do that? Or do you like to have your colons right next to your parentheses like God intended?
I like them right next. However, a lot of times with me, if I type something out and end it with an emoji, it'll delete everything beforehand and just paste the emoji. So like I'll go to respond to someone and I'll type out a whole thing and then it'll just turn out to be a smiley face. I'm like, well, that sounds creepy. Mm-hmm. Like why did this happen? So maybe Lucky Seventh was just trying to circumvent that. Although several people in the chat have typed things with emojis at the end. So who knows?
Gives $4.99 and says, Yahtzee, the narrator of Baldur's Gate 3 quoted you in an interview recently. Also, the recent patch note alluded to your ZP review. I knew about the patch notes thing. I think it's actually alluding to my latest extra punctuation, isn't it?
That's right.
They added some nuance to the relationship with the wizard bloke, which was something I brought up in the extra punctuation, and I don't think I brought it up in ZP. I didn't know about the interview, though. Drop me a link, because I always like to see mentions of me in the wild.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down.
After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
I think it was the bloke who made Fallout had like a video blog lately where he mentioned something I did once and someone linked to me on Twitter. And I was very chuffed.
We probably bring you up on streams every once in a while.
Oh, you don't count.
Casey, we don't count when we're playing the Portal 2? Oh my God, we're doing so good in Portal 2, by the way. Let me tell you. We got all this goo everywhere. We're learning how goo works.
Well, of course you don't, because, you know, we're mates and we all work together. It's like being mentioned by random people around the industry. That's where it's very flattering and interesting.
Nick gets a lot of mentions in your EPs and ZPs. Okay. Shout out to Nick, editor Nick.
Geldon Yetich gives $5 and says, while game quality makes me a happy gamer, I suspect success only proves it happened at the right place and time. Lousy games can sell well too. Yeah, there's always that unknown X factor. You never know when the audience will be receptive to your one specific thing.
I don't know. If you look at like the best-selling games of most years, usually it's not something lousy, right? Like, I don't know. Usually if something's like bad, it doesn't sell well. There's like stuff you might not give a shit about Madden or your Call of Duties, but like they're constructed. I don't know if that's a compliment to say they're constructed. I think everything is constructed.
I always wonder, speculate on how completely impossible it is to even try to predict what will be like a breakout hit. To distract my youngest while she was brushing her teeth, my wife is taking to playing Baby Shark on her phone. I was like, what the hell was it about Baby Shark that made it like everywhere for a while?
Yeah, yeah.
Who the fuck knows? I mean, did the creators even suspect for a second that their dumb kids song they put on YouTube alongside billions of other dumb kids songs that people use to distract their toddlers to brush their teeth would somehow be this massive breakout hit?
No, it's sort of impossible to fathom. I don't understand how it comes. Yeah.
It's almost intimidating how impossible to fathom it is. It's like having to share a world with Cthulhu or something.
Oh, no. I don't want to share a world with him. He's got weird face tentacles.
This enormous market force that could just elevate something to massive success or flick it out of existence with the slightest thought.
The algorithm. I don't know what algorithm, but it's just the algorithm.
The algorithm. There you go.
Yeah.
Old Hunter 77 gives $2 and says, Dedafile books make for delightful summer reading. Thank you very much, Old Hunter 77. I recommend all of my books.
Beach reading.
Alex Armstrong gives $5 and says, we know your thoughts on early access games, but have you tried the demo to Tagline? It's neon white gameplay with art style tangential to Jet Set Radio. No, I'd never even heard of that.
I've never heard of it either. I might check out this demo. I like all those things. You have to put in word game. You can't just Google Tagline.
No.
Looks great. Wishlisted it. It got wishlisted.
Man.
Please log in. Suck it. I'm already logged in.
Two Lupus One gives $10, and this is their first super chat, so it'd be nice.
Oh my gosh.
It says, hey, first time at a stream since it's 3 a.m, so I can't stay, but I want to ask if either of you ever played Arx Fatalis. It's one of my favorite games, and I think it's a forgotten gem. I have never played it. I have heard the title here and there.
It was, I have not played it either. It was, I believe, the first game from Arkane Studios.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so a little bit of that Redfall, a little bit of Arx Fatalis DNA in Redfall. People seem to love it. It was a little, it was probably, I think it leaned closer to their Looking Glass roots than something like, you know, Prey or Deathloop do. But I feel like you might like Arx Fatalis, but are you going to go back and play this game from 2002?
Probably not. I've already got Immortals of Avium and Armored Core 6 to play today.
Yeah.
Robert Johnson gives $20 and says, hey, Yazi, sorry for off topic, but I've been wondering about this for a while. Can you offer any explanation for how Derby's assistant actually receives the blink codes for his tools? Does he have an implant or something? You know, I should be more active on Goodreads or something so that there's an avenue for people to ask me questions about my books.
Yeah.
Yeah, I figured he'd just have an implant, something, that, like a very simple one that would just send a very simple signal every time he blinked or moved his eyes in a specific way.
Yeah.
Or maybe there's like an implant in his eyes that's like a little camera that means his assistant can constantly see what he's seeing and appraise him of his situation. That's a possibility. It's because like his assistant is like his, like the Otacon to his Solid Snake, you know, like the voice in the earpiece that tells them what to do all the time.
Does that assistant pee their pants like Otacon?
No.
It's weird that Otacon and Otacon's sister both pee their pants. You think that's like a thing? Like,
and Otacon's dad and the character of Metal Gear Solid 3 who was basically the Otacon standby.
Yeah.
Someone's got to piss their pants. Some intelligent person has to piss their pants at some point in a Metal Gear Solid game.
Not a good story unless you piss your pants.
Just to illustrate the difference between them and the action hero protagonist, I suppose.
Yeah. Snake has never pissed himself.
Well, he might if there was some kind of gameplay benefit to it.
Like the wolves won't attack him if you just cover yourself in your own urine.
Yeah, if it increased his camo rating while he's hiding in a toilet.
Oh, smells like piss. Definitely someone in there.
That's the sort of thing Hideo Kojima would do.
It is. I mean, yeah, you had to... Oh, no, there was piss. Piss bombs. Well, you didn't piss yourself in Death Stranding.
Oh, yeah.
You would like piss and then blood
if
bombs.
If only Otacon had been the protagonist of Death Stranding, he'd have finally found his milieu.
That game could have used Otacon. Like, you had some buds in that game, but none of your buds were as entertaining.
You mean
as
a character who didn't come across like they were from space? Yeah, Death Stranding could have certainly used some of those.
What a great game. 10 out of 10.
Anyway. Oh, speaking of space, But in Space, though, gives us $10 and says, did you guys know that a Baldur's Gate-themed magic set was released last year? Karlach's card has gone from $3 prior to Baldur's Gate 3 releasing to $15 now. No bigger point.
We should have invested.
That was effed up. I don't think I ever ran into that character, Karlach.
Oh, the big red barbarian devil?
No. I just went around after the crash at the beginning of the game. I recruited... the vampire thiefy dude, the wizard dude, and Shadowheart, and the lizard lady. I think that's all I found in like the initial area.
Hmm. I don't know. Maybe Karlach comes later on in the game. We had an interview go up on the website over the weekend with the actor who played Karlach. So,
man, their performance was completely lost on me then.
Literally lost on you. Yeah.
Anyway, Tsunami Dusha gives $20 and says, I've noticed for Cell Shaded, Tears of the Kingdom, Hi-Fi Rush, and Cyberpunk, that I often stop whatever journey I'm on and just look around at the scenery more than any other style of games. Do you have this habit with any other recent titles?
Wait, Cyberpunk?
Okay. I think he means Bomb Rush Cyberpunk.
Oh, Cyberpunk. Gotcha. That makes
Although
sense.
I'd argue Tears of the Kingdom isn't that Cell Shaded either.
No. I don't think it's, I mean, like, Wind Waker cel-shaded, but...
Yeah.
Regardless, those kind of, like, sort of stylized visuals like that, as opposed to photorealism.
Tears of the Kingdom's more, it's more sort of stylized texturing than cel-shading.
Mm-hmm. Like, photorealism, while impressive, is ultimately, like, I've been to really nice places on Earth, Humblebrag.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, I've seen the Grand Canyon... And so can you make a canyon in a game that can impress me as much as the Grand Canyon? Probably not. But I've never seen a sky island. I've never been on a big old sky island. So if you put me on a sky island in a game, I'll be like, oh, shit, this is really good looking. I've never been to a sky island.
And really, realistic graphics makes Guess the Game less fun. Because half the time, they'll just bring up the first image and it's just like a tree on a hill.
And you're like, I don't know.
Yeah, and it's just realistic. And I'm like, well, that could be like 20,000 different games.
I love the idea if going forward your zero punctuations are now constantly going to just be grading games based on how good they are for Guess the Game. I had a lot of fun with this game, but it's not a good Guess the Game contender. So
you joke, but it's as good a metric as any to have a very distinctive, like, immediate visual style, isn't it?
No, I agree. Also, you need a name that isn't just a bunch of shitty words combined.
Yeah, we've been over that.
Yeah.
Dimitri gives $2 and says, old God of War style spectacle fighters. I miss them.
Mm. Yeah, we don't get those a lot anymore.
When you say, like, the Devil May Cry style.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess Platinum's sort of single-handedly keeping that particular genre afloat.
Yeah. And then it seems like those, like, creating a really good combat system, like a really deep and sort of fluid combat system like that, feels like something that, like, indie games haven't really tapped into yet, right? Well, like, there's no example of, like, an indie game where the combat feels as good as a Revengeance or as a Bayonetta or as a DMC, right?
Well, it's only because it's hard.
Yeah.
And what about Hollow Knight?
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking 3D as opposed to 2D. I think 2D has definitely nailed it. And like Nick mentions, there's a lot of indies in the space working on, so maybe there will be kind of a breakthrough.
It's how to create, like, a Spectacle Fighter-style combat engine that doesn't just devolve into button mashing. I think Hi-Fi Rush was really good at the whole rhythm thing helped me not just fall into a button mashing place. You were talking about, like, Tony Hawk's as, like, a comparison to fighting games earlier, and that felt very apt for me because in both genres I tend to just end up button mashing.
Yeah, and it kind of just feels like you're always out of control.
Yeah.
Someone in ZeoGoat mentioned Wanted Dead. Did you play Wanted Dead earlier this year?
That's the one that kept coming up as, like, this weird, quirky, like, niche hit. Like a cult.
Yeah. And it's like so bad it's good, but then it's like, is it actually genius?
Because I started playing it, but it was just so bad I couldn't be bothered playing anymore.
Yeah. I think it was my problem is, especially the first couple levels, a little too hard. A little too hard. Needs to be less hard.
It missed its chance. Yeah. I don't feel like I'm ever going to go back to it.
Yeah. I just think about that game a lot. It's just very weird.
Robert Johnson gives $5. Says, one of the chickens gave me a fart egg. Man, that's a weird thing to say out of context, Robert Johnson. I'm not even sure what game you're talking about. Also, do you think Camelot might finally now revive the Golden Sun series?
I would fucking love that. Oh my god, what are we doing? How is there not a new Golden Sun game? What is happening to us as a society?
I don't know. I've never played or know anything about Golden Sun, except that my wife has occasionally brought it up as a game she played as a kid and is very nostalgic for.
It was great. It was on the Game Boy Advance, and then I believe there was also one for the DS. But they were just wonderful, simple, kind of throwback 16-bit RPGs.
Hmm. Well, there you go.
It was great. I think they're adding them to Switch Online. So if you have Switch Online and your wife ever wants to replay it, there you go. Oh, also, I think you missed by Witticism.
I did. Witticism gives $5 and says, I think we're going to see more games like Evil West soon, a revival of the 360-era 10-hour linear single-player adventure. Well, as I said, I would be very happy to see that because it would give me more time in the week to do things other than play the game I have to review.
That'd be great. And you'd be able to actually finish the game and not, like, I tried to play a 100-hour game.
Man, like, the games I actually... 20 hours into it. Games I actually finish before I review them are kind of in the minority these days.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not going to be... I mean, a bunch in a row is like, no finishing Baldur's Gate, no finishing Sea of Stars, no finishing Starfield. Baldur's Gate.
I didn't finish Sea of Stars before I've made my review. I absolutely did not finish Starfield before I've written my review that I'm writing now. Very much doubt I'll get through Armored Core 6.
Yeah.
Alex Armstrong gives $5 and says, only just now got into Adventurers Nigh and I'm loving it. McDonald's reference. Though I find it funny that Mortimer is basically Trilby or Dashford Pierce with pointy ears. Well, I think the fact is, Alex Armstrong, I just really like that sort of character. I like lovable rogues. Con artists. And people who operate above the law or below it. Basically not at the same level as the law in either in whatever sense.
one way or another.
I like writing clever characters. Characters who try to, like, con their way out of difficult situations and are out for themselves.
Do you think what's the biggest part of yourself that's in Mortimer?
His tendency to get flustered when things start going to shit. Because that's basically just me.
That's a very good answer.
Like, I'll go into, like, role-playing Mortimer full of really confident ideas for his next brilliant scheme, And then, like, a natural one will come up and I'll just start to panic. And you'll yes, you'll certainly see that in effect if you watch through the whole series. Seems like a lot of people have been getting into Adventurous Nigh lately.
Like, yeah, it's perfect. Anyone jumps on and then they're like, oh shit, I have 30, 40 episodes to catch up on.
Yes. I think we're reaching the Star Trek Next Generation Season 3 peak, where it will suddenly become incredibly popular and more than 30,000 views per video.
Wonderful.
Fungus Finder gives $5 and says, silly stroke unanswerable questions. Do y'all think there are new genres yet to be found? Or is it likely that we've seen every possible type of game by now? Well, never say never, Fungus Finder. You don't want to be like the American Patent Office circa around the end of the 19th century when they tried to close their doors and said, no, everything that could possibly be invented has been invented. So we're just going to like draw a line under it.
Is that real?
That's true. That actually happened.
What a massive boner move on their part.
Well, quite. But, and as I've said before, if we could think up incredibly innovative ideas for new genres of games, we'd be in the business of making games and not just criticizing them.
Yeah. What was the last... I mean, in the indie space, I feel like we more often see...
Yeah, there's all sorts of experimental stuff, a lot of which that you never see... rise above a certain level of awareness, just because it's just not, they didn't execute it quite that well.
Just the last couple of years, we had the whole cranker genre with my crank.
Oh yeah,
I don't know where my cranker is anymore. I spent $200 on that thing, and I think I've lost it in my house, which isn't
the
good.
The ideas are out there.
Yeah.
B.S. Marsh gives $2 and says, Marty, your continued defense of Balan is hilarious. Now I didn't hear much defending of Balan from Marty today, B.S. Marsh. I don't know what you were hearing.
It's not defense. I just played through it, and I'm fascinated by it. And it's a game that has small bits of, like, this is an interesting idea, and then 10,000 terrible decisions were made surrounding it.
Where are the small interesting bits?
I like the concept of all the different costumes and abilities. It reminds me of the game Space Station Silicon Valley, which I really liked, where you played a little robot who would inhabit the body of different robot animals, and like whichever animal you were had a different ability. And so I like the idea that you're playing as, you have to like go in with a loadout, and you're like, okay, I'm going to use these three different costumes, and one can jump really high, one can open secret doors, and one can fire rockets. And if you were to design a play space to where, depending on the different outfits and abilities you took, you could do very different things in that level to get to the goal, that is an interesting kernel of an idea.
I feel like
it's just the execution that was terrible. From
if it were me, I would give every costume at least some kind of jump and not just have one costume that can only jump.
It is wild to me that you can enter a level with three costumes and none of them can jump, and there's like certain levels where you can only get 5 feet into it, and then there's like a small lip that you just can't get over, and you're like, all right, I have to go back to the closet to get new costumes. It is wild. Like,
you sort of expect that to be one of those YouTube skill run videos, like, can I beat Balan Wonderworld only using the fucking turns into a cube fox costume?
And you just can't. Like, there's no ability to just be like, I just want to be the girl. I just want to be the main character who could just do a simple jump. Like, it's shocking if you have your three costumes. It's very bad. It's very strange.
Main character should have been wheelchair bound until they put a costume on.
Like Jake Sully from the hit film Avatar and Avatar 2 The Way of Water.
Is he still wheelchair bound in the second one? Is he like?
I think he is as a human, but as an avatar, as a Na'vi, he's fine.
Doesn't he like permanently ditch his human body at the end of the first film?
Yeah, who wants a human body? If I could be a big, tall, blue alien, what the fuck do I need this meat sack for?
Not quite. B.S. Marsh gives $2 and says, I'm hoping the prequel involves farm animals. The Adventurous Nigh prequel.
Oh, gotcha. Oh, no. I hope not in a bad way.
Well, buy Mortimer a few drinks. I'm capable of anything, I'm sure. And where are we?
Blue McNeil?
We jump to the bottom again. Give me a second. Yes, Blue McNeil gives $2 and says, colon, smiley face.
See, we don't know if Blue McNeil tried to have a whole other message and then it got smiley face. There's no way to know.
Grinning face with big eyes. If you mouse over it, that's what it says.
I don't like that at all. I mean, it is a grinning face with big eyes.
That's the only time I'd ever see a grinning face that close to a colon. Hey!
Ba-dooch.
Evil Miera gives 50 Swedish kroner, I believe, and says, this year seems like it's stuffed to the brim with good games. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want another pandemic to get a glut of games, though. Any alternative ideas? Ban AAA games of certain budgets or above, so that they have to split up their budgets and make lots of smaller scale innovative titles.
I love it. I love it. No sequels for 5 years.
Yes.
Yeah. No sequels for 5 years, and all games have to be under $10 million.
Actually, no sequels at all. Well, fuck it.
Oh, well, not ever, because what if I want another Zelda? But that'll be like 6 years.
Well, that's not really a sequel. That's just another installment of Zelda.
Okay, as long as they get more Zelda, then that's fine.
Okay. I mean, Tears of the Kingdom is the sequel to Breath of the Wild. But it's not a... Breath of the Wild wasn't a sequel to Skyward Sword.
Gotcha. So they could do a new Zelda. It's just got to be completely different.
Yeah. Perfect. John Connor gives $5 Canadian. Says, more games that require us to think of a new name for the genre it just created. Or spun off of so hard it redefined stagnant genres. Dark Souls, Obra D.
The big Obra D. Well, yeah. I mean,
genres always start with like one exemplar and everything just... Yeah. And for a while the genre's just called such and such likes.
The Doom likes.
Yeah, the Doom clones and the Grand Theft Auto clones and such like.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it works. Pat Metroidvania as well. Pat and Pike gives member for 14 months in early access and says, do you have any well-loved classic game you hate? Oh, no end, Pat and Pike.
Ooh.
Everyone apparently saw something in The Last of Us that I didn't say.
It was wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Less hate and more of I have like complete indifference towards a lot of really beloved games like Skyrim and The Witcher and Mass Effect. Although I do want to play Mass Effect. But it's just indifferent. I just haven't played it and I don't really have a huge interest in playing it.
All right then. Christian Hansen, a member for 2 months in early access, says any specific reason that slightly something else is in this daytime slot? Well, because before this, I'm writing the review for next week, and mm-hmm. after this, I'm getting lunch, and then I'm going to spend the afternoon playing video games. That's why it slots into this specific time.
Yeah. As for why it's on a Monday, I don't know, just because it is.
Although, I might have to... Actually, I was meaning to bring up with you, I need to reschedule next week's slightly something else a little bit.
For Labor Day?
Yeah, because I'm going away for Labor Day weekend and I won't be back in time.
We can do it another day. That's fine. We'll figure out a day.
We could probably do it on Tuesday or something.
That sounds fine. We'll be able to figure it. Okay. I have faith in us.
And Vactor, member for 39 months in early access, did you really forget the lizard lady's name? I did at the time I was writing that, but actually I've still forgotten it. It's Lay something? Lay-Zell? Is that it?
Lay-Zell. That sounds right.
It's some...
I forget game characters' names a lot, even
some
in games
weird
like.
Made-up fantasy name.
Yeah.
Do you find it easier to remember completely made-up names like Lay-Zell or incredibly generic names, like when a shooter protagonist is named Alex Mason?
That's a really good... That's a good question. I played... I don't remember either of the two playable characters' names in Sea of Stars, and I beat that game.
I made a joke along those very lines when I was writing the review for this week.
Either of their two names. I remember Garl, because Garl had a nice personality.
Well, everyone remembers Garl.
The warrior cook.
Who could forget Garl?
No one would ever forget Garl. I literally forgot.
But the actual two leads are just boring-ass warrior monks.
Yeah.
Zael. I remembered Zael. One of them was Zael.
Guy or the girl?
That's the dude.
Okay.
And having looked it up, the girl's name is Valier, like Valerie, but with the I taken out.
I disagree. I don't remember any of their names.
No, I didn't either.
Garl's great, though. Shouts to Garl.
Do you remember the name of any other character? Like, what's the name of that ninja party member?
It's like it's with an S, but there's some weird lettering somewhere.
I've suddenly realized I completely forgotten her name as well.
Something has like an umlaut or something, or there's like a couple characters have like punctuation in their names.
I'll come up with better character names, Sabotage, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, call you them. Got Garl. Garl's great.
Well, we remember
Carl
him.
Carl with a G.
Yeah. We remember him because he's like the life and soul of the party.
Yeah, he's great.
Whenever
he's
Garl's
like
not on
the
Whenever Garl's not on screen, every other character says, "Where's Garl?"
Bring back Garl.
Where's Garl? Call your character something really memorable, like Sausage McBossage.
Sausage McBossage?
You'll remember that.
I would absolutely remember if my main character of a RPG was Sausage McBossage.
There you go.
Of the New Haven McBossages.
Jen Weatherwax, member for 34 months in Early Access, and says, best first game for a little kid, what age to start? Good question, because I can actually answer that.
Oh, nice.
Well, my eldest, we wanted to keep something to distract them, have something to distract them for a while. They were interested in video games, what child wouldn't be, from watching me play Mario and stuff, but they couldn't quite get their hands around actually playing a Mario platformer. Even like the prospect of navigating a character with the analog stick was just completely unclear. But then I was reading up online, and I've read an article that recommended Mario Kart, because Mario Kart, the latest one on Switch, has an option where you can just automatically accelerate and automatically steer.
She
got really into that. I mean, the game still responds to you steering and pressing buttons, but it will automatically do it for you if you don't press anything. So she got into that. But she's actually gotten really into playing games on the 3DS, on my wife's old 3DS. Because you don't have to worry about the analog stick and how it corroborates to the movement of things in the world. You just press on the screen to press where you want to go. She's been playing Pokemon Ranger, and she's been really into that, as long as she gets my wife to read out all the text for her, because she can't read yet.
That's a lot of work. Yeah, I would imagine like it's probably like iOS, like iPad games, you know, sort of like games that are just very, very tangible. Yeah, I guess I never thought. Yeah, I don't know at what age like using an analog stick to control a character in a 3D space would make sense.
Because you forget as a career insider for gaming how much we just take for granted in terms of muscle memory and stuff. But even the simple act of moving around with an analog stick, or like looking around with a mouse, for someone who's never played video games before ever in their lives,
very unnatural,
is very hard to get their sea legs in, as it were.
Absolutely.
HJorth87 is in the 50, gives 50 Danish kroner, and says, Karlak is just in the beginning. She is awesome. I want more air pirates and airships. Maybe sandbox. Sadly, I can't program, have looked into learning. My, that's quite one of those little ADHD comments we get now and again that just can't seem to settle on what it wants to say.
I thought it was great. I think it's very economical. That's what I thought. To get a lot of thoughts in there. I like the idea of air pirates and airships, which I feel like you could do in a lot of different genres. You could do in like sort of being a swashbuckling air pirate, like in something like Skies of Arcadia, or you could just be controlling the ship. Give me some Crimson Skies and whatnot.
Ain't no shit stopping you from learning to program, HJorth87. Just download Unity or Game Maker and find some tutorials, and away you go.
There you go. UNITY.
Tsunami Dusha gives $5 and says, I apologize for calling Tears the Kingdom cell shaded. Here's $5 in recompense.
We accept your apology and your money. Thank you so much, Tsunami Dusha.
I don't. Okay. I need more money. We've only got 3 days left in the current target, and we're only at 92%.
Yeah, if we don't hit 100, Casey and I are both fired.
I blame whoever put an ampersand in the HTML.
I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but it was Nick.
That's just thrown everyone off, clearly.
Yeah, the SEO, the search engine, people are searching, how do I give money to Casey and Marty, but it's not working.
I'll expect to be seeing that goal fulfilled. Or I'll be very disappointed in all of you, audience.
Yeah, because Casey and I wound up being homeless. Nick, get your ampersands out of chat. I don't think I could ban Nick because it's the Escapist channel. I don't think you can ban yourself from a chat.
Alex Armstrong gives $5 and says, old Saints Row style games should come back, maybe with a supervillain protagonist and cool title like Mankind Is Yet to Recognize My Genius, wink wink. Which is referencing an old joke I made in my old Saints Row 2 review, where I should make a game where you play as the Riddler. And
oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, you have to like take over the city with like by organizing your gang. But I'm pretty sure since I made that joke, there have been games that sort of do that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was before. Like Infamous and Prototype sort of pioneered the supervillain sandbox as a concept.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. Man, a Riddler game would be really interesting.
Yeah, like there'd be a lot of management involved, a lot of like organization. Yeah. You have to design, like play Evil Genius or something, and you got to design a labyrinth of deadly traps.
Yeah, I like that. I feel like they played that. There was that shitty Batman game where you played it. Was it Gotham City Imposters? I don't know if it was shitty. Yeah. I didn't actually play it, but that's not what I want from that. It wasn't like a hero shooter. I don't want that.
Yeah, I think that game just sort of quietly disappeared. One of many live services games to have just
ripped,
no longer supported, and have now disappeared into the toilet drain of history. Humane Shield gives $4.99 and says, do you think the original creators can be a detriment to game genre they're best known for? Examples, Lord British and Peter Molyneux. I think the trouble with like the old classic creators is that, you know, a lot of them don't really evolve with the medium.
Yep.
That was always old British and Peter Molyneux's problem. Especially Peter Molyneux. He ruled the roost when video games were still in 2D, funnily enough, when there were still parameters and restrictions, and you had to be creative with what you had. The moment there were a lot less restrictions, things kind of went to shit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a tough thing. That's why there's so few people in any medium that are able to evolve with the times and stay popular and relevant for decades and generations. Yeah. Like
I'd put Hideo Kojima up there.
Yeah, and Miyamoto. I think those are two
creators who've managed to evolve with the medium.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Anyone Western? Nothing leaps to mind. John Carmack, maybe.
Yeah, he sort of went full into the tech side of things, though, right?
Yeah, he hasn't done much lately. Well, he was always like basically just the tech guy. He relied on the rest of id Software to come up with the creativity shit.
Yeah.
That's why Quake 2 was made after John Romero left and was kind of a boring game for tech nerds.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'll be curious to see if some of the indie auteurs that people really like still are still sort of pushing boundaries 10, 20, 30 years from now.
Like your Lucas Popes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What about your Jonathan Blow?
He just still has two games. He doesn't have a third game. There's no third game yet.
Yeah, he's sort of...
Very long.
Yeah. Yeah, he's sort of dropped out of the picture as a creative.
Like, he's still working on... So, like, I saw his studio, Thekala, at a job listing for something. They're working on their next project, but... Yeah, no idea.
The hell knows. What a pretentious sod that Jonathan Blow is.
Witness is great, though. I love when the line connects with the dot. It's, oh, man, it feels great.
Wesley Thomas.
Very pretentious.
Oh, hang on. Missed one. Devon gives $10 and says, when is the Marty Yahtzee Frost Nick Baldur's Gate 3 co-op run? Never.
Oh, we both said never.
We all got shit to do.
Too busy.
Yeah.
Busy. Frost out here. He's cold. Frost is cold taken. Frost is stuff alleging.
Frost's got 19 billion things to do.
Oh, my God. Moment. So
and
popular.
So do I. And so does Nick. The other one with all the free time.
What are you talking about?
All right, we're all doing shit then. We've all got shit to do.
What kind of weird... Just because I play Balan Wonderworld at night doesn't mean I have free time. It just means I'm bad at managing my time.
I make bad choices. I got a family as well.
That's true.
You don't, do you? You don't have kids.
I don't.
Nick doesn't have kids, and I don't think Frost does. So you guys don't have the excuse. Wesley Thomas gives to Canadian and says, thought of something. I miss RTS games.
Did they not make them anymore?
Surely there's like still those coming out. When was the last one of those?
StarCraft II. I don't actually know. I've got no... I have no fingers on the pulse of the RTS genre.
No, me neither.
Know. Company Heroes? Is that an RTS? Company Heroes 3 came out a little while ago.
When was the last StarCraft?
StarCraft 2 was like 12 years ago? 10 years ago? 30 years ago?
Who cares? Zaratha gives $2 and says, Cube Fox, it's a fox in a box. Don't miss the rhyme. Okay.
Was that from? Was that the Fox Box from Balan?
Yeah. But is the fox in a box wearing socks?
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun.
And is the fox...
Pikmin. Yeah, Pikmin's kind of an RTS.
I suppose.
Pikmin's great.
For babbies, maybe.
Yeah. Babbies first RTS.
Fat Cock gives $2 and
Isn't
says...
Isn't that a fun one to say?
I know, right? I can't wait for Silent Hill 2 remake. Oh, fat cock. You're trying to get a rise out of me now.
And it worked.
And then Alex Armstrong...
Luber Team's going to do it. They're going to do it.
And then Alex Armstrong gives $2 and says, but Portal 2, Zelda Majora's Mask, Half-Life 2, Thief 2, and Silent Hill 2, in reference to me saying no more sequels.
We said going forward, no more sequels. Those ones are fine.
Also, I feel like if you just called Silent Hill 2 something like Mr. Sunderland's Wild Ride, it would still have been a perfectly good game because it's got virtually no connection to the previous game.
Yeah. It'd have been pretty huge if it was called Mr. Sunderland's Wild Ride.
Although Thief 2, I'll grant you, because Thief 1 was very shaky and Thief 2 was like the perfect distillation of the formula.
Yeah. Do you think anyone would remember Alan Wake's name if the game wasn't called Alan Wake? If the game was called, like, whatever the city's called, Bright Falls or something.
Well, there's an easy way to gauge that thing. Quick, Marty, what's the name of the protagonist of Control?
Jesse. Owens.
Nope.
Jesse Owens was an Olympic runner.
Well, I guess people wouldn't remember his name then.
I remember Jesse.
Yeah, you remember the Jesse part, but there's lots of Jessies in the world. Got to narrow it down.
Maybe didn't have a last name. Faden. That's a bad last name. That's not a strong last name.
Yeah. I remembered it.
Did you really?
Yeah, with a bit of thought. Although I wanted to see if you would. I know that sounds like...
They should have called her Jesse Control. That's how I would have remembered the name. The name Control is a great name of a game.
Jesse Control.
Yeah.
Hello, Mrs. Control. There was an old Fry and Laurie sketch called Control and Tony. There was just a conversation between two like secret agents in like MI6, and one of them was just called Control, and I was just reminded of those sketches, and they're very funny. You should check them out.
There you go. A little reco for everyone.
LL Trash, member for 15 months in Early Access, says, favorite setting that is underutilized in games? Pirate ships. I want every game to be on a pirate ship.
That's great. Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
An underfunded, middle-sized British town, like the one I grew up in. Where if a subway opens on the high street, you like go, oh my God, we've got a subway now.
What's the best representation of that town, of a town like that in media? Is there like a movie, a TV show, or a game where you're like, yeah, you kind of nailed the feel of that? Like everybody's gone to the Rapture? Didn't that take place in like an old little British village?
No, that was a small village. I'm talking about a medium-sized industrial town like the one I grew up in.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Someone's making like a sort of spoof Duke Nukem mod that's set in like a British town, and that always reminded me of my hometown. I forget what it's called. I don't know. Mr. Ray Muffin 2, member for 1 month in Early Access, says, more money!
Yes.
Yes, please.
Mr. Ray Muffin.
We would certainly like some more of that.
Yahtzee, look who's back.
Fat Koch gives $10 and says, Marty, Mass Effect is a wonderful game, but has not aged well. It's very much a it gets good later, but if you can get past that, it's great time.
Oh, I didn't realize that's how people feel about it. I'm probably going to play it eventually. That and of all those games I haven't played, that and Undertale are the two I'm going to play. I feel like I will enjoy it, well, hopefully.
No excuse for not having played Undertale.
I got no excuse for Undertale. No, and it's pretty short, too.
Yeah.
So. I'm playing Resident Evil Zero now. Did you ever play Resident Evil Zero?
Oh, Christ. That was that prequel starring that one nurse lady from the first
Rebecca
game.
Chambers. I remember her name.
Yeah.
First and last name. In my mind, that game was 90% on a train. That game is on a train for about an hour and a half, and then you are no longer on the train. So my mind's playing tricks on me.
I remember where every Resident Evil game had two campaigns, one with the lady and one with the dude.
Yeah.
And for a while, everyone just went, oh, well, I guess that's just how you make survival horror games. So yeah. Alone in the Dark, The New Nightmare did the same thing.
Silent Hill never had multiple pro tags, did it?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Silent Hill 1 was always about Harry Mason, who's in town on vacation. He's all about Harry Mason, who's in town on vacation. It's all about Harry Mason, he's in town on vacation. where was I? Urb4NM, Urban M gives 100 PLNs and says, as mentioned before, I want more spectacle fighters like Devil May Cry series, so here's one to the cause. Also looking forward to Portal 2 co-op, as it looks to me like we will see some of the divorce em up in action.
I think Casey and I will be a great... We work together great solving puzzles currently, so I think we're going to be a great team in Portal
co-op. Did you ever play It Takes Two together? That's a good divorce.
I did not play it with Casey. No, I played it with a friend though, and I thought that was a very good divorce mom. Yeah, about terms, divorce. Yeah, a literal divorce.
In terms of a two player local co-op game where you have to work together, is what we mean by divorce mom, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Fungus Finder gives $2 and says, "Yeah, I'll have a kid in 7 months. What do I do? Panic, because." Mm-hmm. Your life will never be the same again. I know people say that in a sort of moony-eyed way, but it's genuinely true because your entire schedule is going to be upended. You're going to sleep horribly for a while, and you're never, never, ever going to go back to the life you knew before. You will learn to cherish your brief moments of free time. Remember how you used to just while away the evening playing whatever video game you like? That's gone.
Do you not get to watch 3 hours of The X-Files every night? When you have kids?
Funnily enough, no. Oh, I get to put the kids to bed, then veg out on the couch with a LaCroix, and then go to bed.
Spicy water. What flavor LaCroix?
I've got cherry LaCroix in the fridge at the moment. Mm. Although it's not LaCroix, it's another brand of the slightly flavored water.
Yeah, I usually just buy whatever's on sale.
Water that has flavors like was once within the earshot of cherry.
Yeah. subtle hints of cherry.
Yeah. A van containing lemon drove past the factory at one point. And finally, Humane Shield gives $4.99 and says, do either of you think Star Citizen will ever live up to the hype? In your opinion, is there a sweet spot of hype to development time? I think the sweet spot for hype is just... make the game good. Because if the resultant game is actually good, people forget all about the long lead up to release. Remember Team Fortress 2?
Yeah.
That was like a joke for a while with how long that was taking.
Yeah. I guess that is the thing.
Everyone forgot those jokes when it came out and blew everyone's mind and redefined multiplayer shooting. Star Citizen, no. Star Citizen will not be one of those. Star Citizen is just another example of the hey, let's do anything kickstarted game where the people actually giving themselves the task of making it didn't really quite internalize what a Sisyphean task they had inadvertently suckered themselves into.
But they just keep making more money on it. It is insane. I don't know what... I still think
they're going to keep developing it as long as the money keeps coming in, but I very much doubt it will be anything like what people are imagining.
Yeah, I still think there's something brewing with that game.
I mean, it's... You can't imagine it'll be much more than what Starfield is, and Starfield's out.
Yeah, but just like, they've released games before. The Star Citizen just feels, I don't know, it feels like a money laundering scam.
Well, you know, the Wing Commander guy's behind it. He's got some successes under his belt. He understands game development, I assume.
We hope.
Chris Roberts, that's his name. I remember, Roberts. It was something incredibly generic. Well, that's all. That was all the super chats. So
we did it.
Thanks for all of those. Oh, here comes another one. Fat Koch gives $2 and says, "I believe in Todd the Rod." Oh, and then Tsunami Dusha comes in with $5 and says, "Sorry for another one, but it's like more obscure puzzle platformers like Rabbit X Labyrinth." Okay.
Rabbit X Labyrinth. Wait, wait. Was this in relation to something else Tsunami Dusha said?
I can't remember.
Or is that a game?
I'm not familiar with it. But, you know, back in the 2D games, there were a lot of, like, eccentric platformers. Some with puzzles attached. Like Lemmings was a whole genre for a while. You'd have games like... there was a game called Morph I've had on the Amiga that was like a puzzle platformer where you could switch between gaseous, solid, and liquid forms.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and you had to use the environment to get to the exit. Or there'd be games like...
I like the idea of the different the three different forms.
Games that were just like platformers where you had to solve the puzzle to get to the exit by using different abilities, sort of like Lemmings, but with multiple variations. Where did Lemmings go, Fungus Finder? Well, if you ever played Humanity, which came out this year, that feels like very Lemmingsy inspired game.
Absolutely.
Blimey, the super chat is coming back just as I was starting to wrap up.
Yay!
Bardungle Barnacle gives $5 and says, "I'd like to see a really good space flight shooter that isn't open world. Did you ever play Descent?"
I played Descent. I played it on PlayStation, though, which was very... I don't think it was meant to be played on PlayStation.
If you like Descent, play the System Shock remake and play all of the hacking minigames.
Oh, yeah, because they're little fly things, right?
Yeah, very Descent-y.
Yeah.
Also, how can you have a space flight shooter that is an open world? Isn't that what space is? Just go anywhere because it's space?
I mean, I guess you'd have, like, if it's mission-based, like...
Like Wing Commander,
Wing Commander, Rogue Squadron, yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Zebra gives $2 and says, "Where do you think you're going? Guess that game. We only do that on the post-ZP stream, Dr. Zebra." Yeah.
This is all business here.
Yeah, it's like something else. This is the talky one.
Also, and by the end of post-ZP, we just get bored of...
usually.
Oh, yeah, we don't even have a space in this overlay.
It's just our dumb faces.
Yeah, but no, most of the times by the end of the post-ZP, we're just sick of playing whatever game it is.
And Zaratha gives $2 and goes, "By the way, Marty, frogs still aren't lizards. Salute."
I think all lizards, all like lizards, reptiles, amphibians, like they're all the same to me. They're all just like...
Oh, really?
I just lump them all in.
Why don't you say that at the next big fight between the frog and the lizard gang?
Oh, no. I just like it. See, I don't know. They're all kind of slimy, right?
Lizards aren't slimy. They're dry. They live in hot climates.
Yeah, that's what Jesse said. I don't believe him.
That's why they're cold-blooded.
I think some people got mad at my animal thoughts, which is just lump them all in together. I think there's birds, there's bugs, there's lizards, and there's just everything else, which is just like mammals.
So, okay. So sloths are the same as funguses in your view?
Yeah, just everything else. Yeah, they're just everything. It's got four legs, and it's like you can pet it.
Well, you made Dimitri so mad. You've made a lot of people so mad. Dimitri had to pay another $2 and say, "Lizard racist."
People say dinos aren't slimy. You guys have never touched a dino. You don't know how slimy it is.
Well, I've touched a lizard.
Yeah.
I imagine that when they said terrible lizard, they weren't referring to their increased sliminess.
Abba.
Although I'll grant you that lizard lady in Baldur's Gate 3 was pretty fucking slimy when I was finished with her.
And got your extra punctuation.
And on that note, let's finally actually wrap this up. So, zero punctuation this week on Sea of Stars. And if you're interested, there's a 3-minute review on that as well. 3-minute review, which recently got a shout out on PC World, incidentally.
I saw that. Also, yeah. The review was more than 4 minutes, so I just lied. We just lied.
Hitting just the big time lie. Is all 3 minute reviews. Don't miss out.
3 minutes to me.
And yes, so there'll be a news presentation on Wednesday, a Sea of Stars for members, and it will be my En Garde Blasphemous 2 review for everyone else.
Nice. And that's what you'll be streaming for post-CP, correct?
Yes, indeed. En Garde and Blasphemous 2. And Frost's pretty sure he'll be guesting on that because he reviewed both of those, apparently.
No, he reviewed Blasphemous. I think Jesse reviewed En Garde, but I think he played En Garde.
Oh, okay. Well... I also have an extra punctuation going out for members on Thursday.
What's that topic?
Out of basically nowhere, that is on the subject of really good intros in games. Sort of following on from our slightly something else. Week. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Specifically referencing Bioshock, partly because we actually recently passed the 16-year anniversary of Bioshock's release, if you're interested.
What a game.
It's a good game.
Great game.
Well, it starts well. That's my point.
Yep. Two-thirds of a really great game.
Yeah. And of course, new episode of Adventurers Nigh for members going out on Saturday. Episode 4 of Season 3, mm-hmm. The Liar, the Witch, and the Wartorn. Episode 3 for that just went out for everyone, so if you haven't seen that, you've got no excuse.
Zero excuses.
Controversially, we actually got into some actual... D&D combat in the last episode, which doesn't happen that often.
Impossible.
And yes, what else are we doing on the Escapist this week?
Other stream today, 6 p.m. Central. The Hinjin boys will be back and they'll be playing Shantae the Pirate's Curse.
Shantae's not that hidden a gem, is it?
See, Jesse asked, it's under the threshold on PC. It's not a very popular PC game. However, it's very popular on like Game Boy Advance and its original platforms and whatnot. I think a hidden gem is a state of mind. Counterpoint, I also don't know anything about animals, so no one should probably go to me with any questions like that. But Jesse asked if he could play it, and I said sure.
People like their jiggling bikini top games.
Yes, exactly. And then all the normal streams the rest of the week, we'll be having Recap, Breakout, Nick will be playing more Dark Souls 2, all the usual stuff. And then on Thursday, we're debuting our new streaming series, Thursday at noon. Speaking of Jesse, I'll be joining Jesse. Jack's going to be joining us for this first week. Jesse has never played a Zelda game and is embarking on a little bit of a Zelda journey. We're starting with A Link to the Past for the Super Nintendo.
Seems like a bit of an oversight for a game reviewer.
Yeah, we all have our blind spots. Tune in for that, and then I believe Nick's Uncharted streams are going to be moving to Friday, so you're just getting more streams, and the Amy and Frost Sly Cooper streams are going to start on Friday. We just have so much shit, it's just crazy. There's too much going on.
Oh blimey,
let us sleep.
And then Paul gave us 740 and gave no comment, just a message.
Paul, that's very sweet of you. That's incredible, Paul.
And then Simple Simon gives $2 and goes, oh sir, just one more thing, doing his Columbo impression.
Incredible. Wonderful. Guys, I'm really proud of us. We're almost at 95%.
Oh, look at that.
Casey and I might not get fired.
I can't really do a Columbo impression, but I'll tell you who does do a good Columbo impression. Jesse, because he does one every time he's playing Grindabid on Adventurers Nigh.
That is Grindabid is very much Columbo.
Now, for our finale, I will now eat the Black Mesa logo in my background. Goodbye, everyone.
And furthermore, thank you, Zarath.
Oh, yes. And Zarath gives $2. And furthermore. Bye, then. Bye.
Hi, everybody. Hi. Hi, everybody.
I love you.